madcap lot. It was the garage.
My pappy said, son, you're gonna drive into drinking if you don't stop driving.
Now you're running car.
Tell him it's your car and you do what you want with it. I own this car, I do as I please. I also own the highway, my taxes paid for that. They're both mine. I own the highway and I own the car. I own everything!
Big trouble. That's the rookie Suarez up and over Regan Smith, the big one. Big trouble in the trial.
Welcome to the Throwing Wrenches Podcast.
Hey everybody, this is Eric Stahl.
And I'm Daryl Scott.
Welcome to another episode of
the Throwing Wrenches Podcast. Otherwise known as, well, we like to bill ourselves as the auto podcast Peoria deserves, but that might be a little lofty. What do you think?
It might be. Well, we all are also a member of the Peoria Podcast Alliance. Kind of. Yeah. We have a meeting next Tuesday. I don't think I'm going to make it, but we're definitely supporting those guys.
I'll take notes for you. Don't worry about it.
All right. So tonight, it may sound a little hollow because we're actually sitting in a big detail center. I guess that's what I'd call it.
Yeah. We're actually on the road, and we're broadcasting live via a tape recorder. Just kidding. That's a Zoom recorder. But we're on the road here in the House of Detail Peoria in North Peoria, and I want to welcome our special guest, Matt Carter, who's one of the co-owners of this business, which, as the name implies, is a detail business, along with your partner Nick Whitaker, who can't join us tonight, but that's okay. We'll catch him on the next one. But Matt Carter, thanks so much for taking time and letting us into your place up here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, welcome, absolutely. And this is a gorgeous place. It even has that new car smell to it. Or is that something you guys bottle here?
Yeah, we bottle it. We're in the back. Yeah,
with the next to the pine tree air fresheners, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as part of the show, with the remote being up here at Detail Peoria, we're going to ask Matt a bunch of questions about detailing. And I'm going to be honest with you. I think Daryl has just been dying to do this show since we started our show 6 months ago.
I'll freely admit that. And it's not because I'm like a detail whiz. It's because I just like to see other people do incredible stuff. And I'll be honest, just following you on social media and seeing some of the work you've done here locally at Cars and Coffee and other people that have nicer cars than me, it's been really, really impressive to see how you guys have grown and what you're able to do. So we're going to get into the nitty-gritty, but how long, for the folks at home who've kind of also been kind of following you online, when did you guys start? And then we'll kind of get into this more, but when did you guys move up here to North Peoria?
Yeah, so this business was actually rebranded to Detail Peoria at the beginning of last year, and then we operated out of a shop in on Knoxville near the hospitals, and we just moved into this facility the 1st of January of 2019.
So pretty recent. So,
but the business was born from a sort of side business that has been running from around 2012.
Right on. And as Eric mentioned, I mean this shop is great because you can kind of just do whatever you want to do and kind of grow into it and really make this your own. So this is cool. I just also want to throw out too, if anyone else has some comments or questions that, when we have guests and you're like, oh, I really want you guys to ask this person this, feel free, send us an email or we're at info@throwingwrenches.com.
You got it.
You can also hit us up on the old Book of Face. We're at the Throwing Wrenches Podcast.
Yeah, we use that thing too much. We probably should find other avenues for communicating, but that's kind of the popular one.
You can't use MySpace anymore. They crashed.
That's true. My GeoCities site's still up. I think the other reason we're coming up here is because this is like 5 minutes from your house. I think this is like payback for driving out to Mackinac.
I didn't plan it that way, but now that you mention it, this is actually great because, I don't have to put $60 worth of gas in my truck, so it's good.
I did. Thanks. Welcome. All right. Let's start our show like we do every show by talking about the projects.
All right.
Daryl, I always start the projects. I'm going to throw it back on you this time. What are you working on? It's springtime. It's almost like 60 degrees outside.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's probably a pretty timely episode because right now I'm starting to stock up on all, not to be, I always say this is weird, detail stuff. I'm in a detail shop.
Oh, what?
I'm not even pandering. I'm not in the same league.
I swear to God.
It's like garden hose and some Meguiars. We're fine. But no, I'm trying to.
Now you're condescending.
No. Trying to get my stuff ready for spring because both mine and my wife's vehicle has got, you know, like the salt cake floor mats and little bits of rust that pop up here and there. I'm like, oh man, I didn't think that door was going, but I'm gonna have to do something about that. So
that's patina, right?
A little bit, yeah, but it's, I don't know, it bugs me. So I'll be dealing with some of that. Picked up some Mobil 1 at Costco along with some microfiber towels. Mobil 1 was on sale there, like a 6-quart case for like $26.
That's so pretty cheap.
Yeah. Yeah, normally there's 30-something, and they're still pretty cheap there. So,
what's the Walmart, like, 5-quart jug run? I mean, that's pretty cheap, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not too bad. I haven't been there in a while, to be honest, but I know that any other place, you know, you walk into, like, a Riley's or something like that, it's like...
The 5-quart jugs are one my customers always walk in with when they're bringing their own oil, and I think they always say Walmart's got the best price, but maybe they don't have a Costco card.
Maybe not.
Yeah, so maybe that's the difference.
I don't know. So that's what I'm up to, just kind of stocking up, getting ready for those nice warm days and hoping they'll come soon.
I'm hoping that Matt lays a smackdown on your Costco towels.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. We'll get into that.
We'll save that for later.
Okay. as for myself, is that everything you got?
That's all I got, man. What are you working on?
Event planning. As you know, every year I take Toyotas and other trucks out west, and so we got... like 2 or 3 trips we're planning this summer. We're going to go to Great Smoky Mountain Trail Ride. It's a Toyota Land Cruiser event in Tennessee, probably in May. Got 3 or 4 customers lined up for that and a couple of returning friends, so it's going to be a good time. Primitive camping, ooh, Dutch oven cooking, you know, driving the trails all day. That'll be like 3 or 4 days. And then we got another trip planned for July where we'll hit the Rimrock Trail. It's south of Moab. Kind of goes from Ouray to Moab. We'll do like a 3-day run out there out in the wilderness. Primitive. I don't know what that noise was.
Yeah, we have a gym right next to
us.
So.
Dude, that was not a kid hitting the ground.
Well, I heard that combined with the plane. I'm like, that doesn't sound... Maybe somebody's landing gear fell off.
Tom Petty. No, he's dead. He already did that.
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah.
So what does a day like that look like when you're out there?
The Tennessee event is actually in an off-road park. It's like 700,000 acres. It's one of the largest in the country as far as a privately owned area. So the Toyota Land Cruiser Association will actually organize that event. They'll have trail runs for rookies, and they'll have like guided trails. But they'll also have just enjoy it yourself and then come back at the end of the day. At the end of every night, they always have entertainment and food. It's the best part about doing those events is it's all local flavor. It's all local bands. It's all local. So... you'll be in the middle of Arkansas at one of these events I go to, and you'll see some of the reddest people you've ever seen in your life. But you know what? They're all driving FJ40s and Land Cruisers. And you're like, I didn't even know this crowd existed. Yeah. So it's pretty cool. You kind of glom yourself with a bunch of people of like-minded interests, and that's what TLCA is good for. So we kind of, you know, hold ourselves against Jeep people and Ford people and Chevy. It really is like a Toyota group overtakes a park or something like that.
Like a Jeep, what, a Jeep Jamboree?
It's kind of that way, but the Toyota's obviously a lot smaller. It's a lot more niche than the Jeep groups. Now, the Western trip is a whole different thing because it's primitive camping, but you're on the trail. You have to pack everything in, so we'll cook breakfast and eat right there on the trail, and then we'll just drive for a couple hours, sightsee, do whatever. Sometimes those trails have some difficult stuff in them, but generally you're not there to break something when you're 3 days out in the middle of nowhere. So I have broke stuff 8 hours into the trail in the middle of nowhere in Moab, and it's not a pleasant experience. But
yeah, that doesn't sound like fun.
Yeah, it really is a different way to see. You know, you can fly anywhere, you can go on vacation, go anywhere, but until you can drive, you know, a day out in the middle of nowhere and just and camp and be in desolation, it's something. I love it.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. So the customers really enjoy it, and it's one of those things that we do at my dealership. It's just something kind of special. So anyway,
that's nice that Toyota still sponsors that stuff and is active.
Yeah.
A lot of manufacturers, it seems like, that's kind of one of those ancillary, oh, yeah, we used to do that, but it's not really essential to the brand or whatever.
I think you're going to find with all manufacturers, whether it's, you know, and actually Porsche is super good about this, you know, about bringing their owners back to do Porsche-sponsored events. Jeep is really good about this. I think a lot of manufacturers have to do that because it's not good enough just to sell a car and then expect people to come back. It's just not going to happen. So you're going to have to create a lifestyle out of that manufacturer, out of that vehicle. So I think hopefully you'll see more of this type of stuff in the future.
Yeah,
I see Bushwhacker doing stuff like this. You know, I see bike shops doing stuff. I don't think it's any different, really.
Yeah, just organizing an activity you can use to enjoy what you just bought there.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes sense.
Yeah, why'd you buy your truck? So you could do truck things with it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dutch oven cooking. That's why I bought my
Anyway, so that's what I got going. Matt, you are in on this. What do you got going on for the spring?
Yeah, kind of the same thing. Spring cleaning type of things at home. Just getting the cars set up, you know, owner detail shop, obviously. So I've got quite a load of things that I need to get done to them. Clean out the garage, that sort of thing. I've got some modifications that I'll be doing to my RS that I'm excited for this this spring. And then in terms of the business, you know, obviously we've just moved into the space, so I'm excited to add some shop management software to the mix, try and automate some things. And then, you know, we're growing and staffing, so we've got to set up policies, procedures, all that
training,
good stuff. Training.
Employee handbook.
Yep, 100%.
For the folks at home, when you say RS, what kind of car are you describing?
It's a Ford Focus RS. So it is a 350-horse, all-wheel drive, kind of motorsport-oriented vehicle, and I love it. So
I've seen a few in town, not too many. So they're definitely a distinctive car, and I don't think, like you said, they don't make too many of them, right?
Yeah, I saw a couple in town when they first came out in 2016, and I don't know if those cars are still around. I don't see them very often myself. So yeah, they're fairly low production, only made for 3 years, and the last year they only made 1,000. So
wow.
Yeah, and these Fords are, like when we autocross, they're the ones I always see on three wheels.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because they have so much friggin' power, and they're going so fast into the turns. I'm on three wheels. It's great.
Impressive little cars. I would love to ride one of those, ride around it, but I can't fit in them. I had a friend of mine, one of the guys I used to work with, he had a Fiesta ST, and that was a fun little car.
Oh, yeah.
A little turbo, six-speed, and the Recaro seats that were in there just like just dug into my back. I'm like, we went to lunch. We went to was it Firehouse Subs one day from Bradley, and I remember every bump. I'm just like, I'm too old for this. 16-year-old Daryl would have loved it, but they're fun cars, and they got a mean attitude. So nice.
You're an autocrosser, right?
Yeah.
So when they do the events up at Caterpillar, are you gonna try and make one of those?
Hopefully this year. So, I mean, I'm an avid motorsport fan, and I track, I autocross. I used to go-kart race until detailing kind of consumed my entire life outside of my day job. But, yeah, this year I think my weekends are freeing up. We're going to try and make more of a presence at these things, and I'll definitely be out at Mossville.
Nice. It seems like a question I should ask at the very end of the show, but you just said that this consumes you. So it's work, but it's your passion. It's fun. Mm-hmm. At some point, does it become unfun? Or you're like,
I mean, there's only so many hours in the day.
Yeah.
So it is awesome that I have this opportunity to do this. But I mean, I'd be lying if it, you know, doesn't bring you to tears sometimes. Honestly, it's when you're trying to take this to the level that we are, like after a full-time engineering work week. There are only so many hours in the day.
Yeah.
So trying to. Yeah, fit it all in.
Daryl and I can barely make a podcast every 2 weeks.
Yeah, every 2 weeks. Yeah, and then I give you kudos for at least pursuing your passion, and you know, because a lot of us, I say, you know, like folks at home just sitting like, yeah, wouldn't it be nice to have my own shop? Wouldn't it be nice to just work on cars all day? And they don't really kind of understand, like you're saying, some of working on cars and setting up a business is making a policy for, like, you know, attendance at work and tardiness and all that.
That's the fun stuff I'm getting into now.
So, I mean, I give you guys all the props, both you and Nick, your partner here, and just making a go of it, because that's stuff a lot of people talk about, and you know, like 10% of the people actually implement it. So, right on.
Appreciate it.
We ready for the headlines?
All right, let's get serious.
All right, we're going to do a couple news articles, and then we're really going to dig in to Detail Peoria here. So, the first one is, I would say it's a national news headline. Car buyers are facing a financial squeeze. This is from Automotive News. Car buyers are at the center of a finance tornado. A quarter by quarter, auto loan amounts, interest rates, and monthly payments keep rising, and incentives keep falling. Those auto finance trends are starting to feel a pinch hard, especially for the low end of the new vehicle spectrum. And that's what's driving some new car shoppers into the used vehicles. Experts say, Patrick Monzi, senior economist for the National Automobile Dealers Association, which I'm a member of, said new car intenders switch to used are absolutely a factor in NADA's 2019 light vehicle forecast of 16.8 million vehicles, down 3% from 17.3 million in 2018. That's about four straight years of 17 million. It's the first time that it's going to be dropped below that. This actually kind of ties in, I think, kind of also to this business here. I mean, people are keeping their cars longer. I think people are taking better care of their stuff. And actually, cars actually do last a little bit longer than they did 20 years ago.
And something else that I'm noticing is just this last week, we were driving right here in Knoxville past Green Chevrolet, and they had a sign saying, like, used vehicle leasing. And
then
What is, I don't, it's,
I heard a radio commercial for it the other day. They were pitching it.
But that's the thing. I mean, if you're looking at like a, you know, say a mid-level Chevy Traverse SUV or something like that, you're talking, like you said, 40, 45 grand.
Yeah.
You know, and back in the day, I remember my parents didn't pay more than about 20, 25. And that was like pushing it for like a minivan, you know. So it does seem like the cost of everything in life, you know, it keeps going up. So where do people who don't have a lot of money or don't have that much credit, you know, like, where do they turn?
Yeah. So what's happening also with used cars, though, is if you look at a used car that's a year or two old, it's pert near the same price as a new car. It is really tough to find a used car that's like, oh, man, that's a steal. That's a bargain.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen right now unless the car's got 10 years on. And even a 10-year-old car, it seems ridiculous, you know, sometimes when you look at some of these. I know the trucks that we sell at Toyota, you can have a 15-year-old Toyota truck and it's still worth 12 or 13 grand. And everybody's like, wait a second, that truck was 25 when it was brand new.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense. So what would you say that people are taking better care of their cars nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things with the prices being what they are for new cars, we see a lot of people that want to invest in the protection up front to put paint protection film on and try and keep that car a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But then it works the other way as well. Some people maybe want to keep their car. You know, they've had it for a few years. They want to freshen it up and put some protection on it so they can, you know, enjoy it for another several years before they need to, you know, replace it.
And the film is, like, genius. I mean, that's...
Oh, like the clear, like, clear protectors.
Yeah. You see it now from the manufacturers right off the get-go, but, you know, to see these cars, you know, get rock chips, stuff like that, just bounces right off of them. I mean, it's like, why didn't they come up with this years ago?
Well, and they did quite a while ago, and it's been improved greatly from, like, 2011, 2012 time frame. So, you know, you see some of the old, really old film, and it has...
whoever that kid is, she is big.
Lifting some heavy weight over there. but anyway, that old film would yellow, right? It doesn't do that anymore. And then films these days have self-healing top coats, so it can help that car look a lot better longer,
no
matter what the care looks like for it.
Yeah, we've had some that if they get some skid marks or scrapes, you can just kind of heat them up a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, even the heat of the sun on a summer day, it'll self-level.
That's incredible. So it's really never... It still remains kind of fluid almost, huh?
So I don't know the science behind that top coat. I know practically what it does, but... you know, you can see if somebody doesn't have, like, perfect wash processes, you've got some of this film on it, you'll see where the film ends, and this paint has light swirling going on, and then the film looks perfect.
Huh. That's incredible. Cool. Better living through chemistry, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's plastics, Daryl, plastics.
I should have gotten into that.
I told you.
Yeah, I know.
All right, we got some local... Would you call this local news,
Well,
Daryl?
No, I think I forgot to update the heading.
Okay, so this is national news.
National news, something you might have followed on social media. That people were kind of complaining a lot about how the state of Arkansas actually upped the age requirement for antique auto plates. And the reason was, like a lot of states, Arkansas had a 25-year requirement, and then you can get antique plates on your car if you're going to shows or taking it to the garage or something like that. Not really intended for people to spend $7 on plates and then drive, you know, a daily car year round.
20,000 miles a year.
Yeah, not really happening, but that supposed to happen, but it was happening. And State Representative named Jack Fortner, actually, he is a classic car owner himself, actually put forth House Bill number 1496, and that actually raised the age. They passed it. Raised the age for antique plates in Arkansas to 45 years old.
Holy cow.
45 years old. Well, you think about it, it's 1974, which a lot of people, you know, you kind of get into this ageism thing where it's like, there are no good cars made after that anyways, which I can, on one hand, there's different types of cars made after that. I mean, you know, you don't have the big muscle cars. You don't have, like, you know, zero emissions, and you can do whatever you want.
I drive one of these cars in question. So.
Yeah, I would get it. But at the same time, you know, there's some pretty historically significant cars that are, you know, made in the early 90s, like a, you know, first-gen Acura NSX. I mean, you can't tell me that that shouldn't be in some sort of, like, a, you know, a collector status.
A protected category.
Yeah, I guess. I guess you could call it that. So, yeah, there was a lot of hullabaloo about that. I don't know. I mean, it does sound like more of an enforcement problem because Here in Illinois, that we have the same rules with the antique vehicle plates. That's a lot of people would kind of complain about that, and then they wound up expanding it to the EA class. That's the expanded antique. So they lifted the mileage restriction from 3,000 to it's unlimited, but you can only run those old cars, I think, from like May to October or something like that. So, and they make you sign here in Illinois. I don't know what they do in Arkansas, but they actually...
Who knows what they do
in Arkansas. Maybe. Yeah, maybe. But they actually, in Illinois, they make you sign an affidavit of use that says, like, I'm only going to drive this to and from, you know, car shows, events, club meets, stuff like that, or to demonstrate the vehicle. So that's another loophole. People are like, well, I'm driving to work so I can demonstrate this suspension rebuild I just did. But I have seen people, and I have had family members that have gotten pulled over and gotten tickets because they're driving in, like, November.
Oh, with the antique plates?
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, at least in Illinois, and I don't think it happens often, but at least here they do enforce it because if you're only paying, here in Illinois, it's like $25-$30 for 5 years. They really, otherwise, if you're going to use that to run, you know, the kids to and from school, it's almost like, in some way, like tax evasion. But that might be a stretch.
Yeah, well, when I have six cars at home, and you have six cars at home, and I have a 1990 Celica that's on the cusp of this 30 years, I'm like, all right, I'm going to put it on the antique plate so I can drive it to the autocross. I can drive it to wherever, you know, during the nice parts of the year. And I don't have to pay $110 for the plate. I'm kind of looking forward to that, so I hope they don't jack that in Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, people, and I will freely admit, I've put antique plates on my old truck. I've got a 76 Chevy pickup, and I've been at Menards, and I've been to the dump, and, you know.
Scandal.
I know. I'm just waiting for somebody to take me to task, but so far, so good. So, I don't know. What do you guys feel? I mean, is there some truth to anything, you know, 25 years old is, like, considered classic, or is it just a used car?
Well, here's a guy who puts his hands on them every day. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. So, I mean, when you ask me, like, what an antique vehicle would be like, I mean, the 70s earlier kind of was what comes to mind, but I think, you know, you put it right. I think it's an enforcement thing. Different people are going to have different things that are, you know, qualify as, like, an antique type of collector car to you. And I don't think that anything made in the 80s necessarily outlaws it from...
Well, I remember... Yeah, and I kind of agree with you there. I mean, I remember putting antique plates on. I had an 86 Cavalier convertible, which my parents still had. They bought it in 88, and the thing is just mint. And my mom has it now.
They still have this thing?
They do.
Oh, my God.
It's absolutely, it is the nicest 86 Cavalier you've ever seen. But it's one of those things.
Not sit often.
No, I got so much stuff. Because I drove that thing in college, and, you know, in the year 2000, it was just like a 15-year-old, 20-year-old thing. And they're like, what are you driving this thing for? And I put, the day it turned 25, I put antique plates on it. And I remember going to the Secretary of State's office on Sterling, and the lady, like, at the teller counter just rolls her eyes. She's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I want an antique plate for this. She's like, you're only going to go to the, you know, shows and this and that. I said, yeah. Then I showed her a picture on my phone, and she's like, all right. But it was like they didn't want to believe that somebody was going to, like, keep that as, like, a collector. So, I don't know.
As if there isn't enough attitude at the DMV now that they judge your cars. Show me a picture.
Right. And, by the way, anybody who does new, antique, classic, brand new, whatever, if you're going and getting a title and registering all that stuff, make sure you get a bill of sale. Because even in Illinois, you don't have to have one, which is weird, because then you can say, like, oh, yeah, I only paid, like, $1,000 for this, you know, 2018 Corvette or whatever. If you pay cash for it, whatever, I don't know. Like, if you buy it at a dealer and they're doing the sales tax and all that, that's different. But private party sales, make sure you bring a bill of sale, and then they will actually photocopy and take keep it with the records.
Really?
Yes. Because there have been instances where folks in, like, other states, like Massachusetts and things, they'll buy, like, oh, I bought a 57 Chevy. What would you pay for it? $5,000. And then you see them on, you know, Barrett Jackson going for, like, $100,000.
Yeah.
And then Massachusetts goes, we think you undervalued or underreported the sale of that car. And they come back after you, like, a year or two later. So
I don't have to worry about that with my daughter's 96 Camry. But I do remember what I paid for it. And I went to the DMV. I said $500. And my wife goes, oh, no, you didn't. You paid a lot more than that. And I'm like, well, you just shut up.
We're going to go to jail.
I'm looking, yeah, exactly. I tried to say shut up with my eyeballs, and it didn't work for, like, the first few times. And then she goes, oh, and then, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so don't get in that situation.
It was a quiet ride home.
It was. First, don't take your wife to the DMV with you when you register in the car. I think that's the lesson to be learned here.
All right, so we're going to get into the nitty-gritty?
Yeah, let's start talking about cleaning cars, because that's the whole reason we're here tonight. So we did our news. We're, you know, I want to call it an interview, but I mean, we're in Detail Peoria. We're in this brand new, what I call a warehouse building. I mean, man, I think the plaster is still wet.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, nice. has a new car smell. This is a beautiful facility.
I'm already thinking of how many cars I could cram in here, and then on the second level, how many to cram.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys could put some racks in here and just dry them out over there on the end.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, that may happen.
Nice.
So
tell us a little bit about how you guys started, because I know this is always like a passion project when people do businesses like this. You know, start out as something you enjoy doing on the weekends, but now you're doing it as a business. So how did you guys... I mean, first of all, how did you guys even meet to decide to do this business together?
Yeah, so it actually started with another party. So a guy named Zach McGovern started the original business out of his apartment garage.
Okay.
He had known how to polish from his teenage years, and he and I started a cat at the same time. So we were good friends. We happened to ride motorcycles together, and so that's how we knew each other. But he just became obsessed with achieving paint correction results on his car, and eventually, you know, somebody said, "Hey, what would you charge to do that to my car?" And that's kind of where it started. I can't put a date on it. It's got 2011, 2012 okay. time frame, so somewhere around there.
Six, seven years ago?
Yep. And I was one of those guys that saw what he was doing. I was like, oh, man, let's do that. So I bought a polisher from him, bought all this stuff, and helped him do my car. He taught me a little bit there, and I was hooked. So I had this new polisher. He had all these cars coming in, and he and I just kind of started.
So when you say you got a polisher, you didn't just get like the AutoZone big
the
round
Sears
wheel
Orbital.
Type. Yeah. Did you get the dual wheel type thing?
Yeah. So I mean, that's one of the best parts about detailing nowadays is that there are so many awesome tools on the market. Yeah. So I got started with a very common entry level polisher, random orbital. That's all we use in here. It's kind of changed the game in terms of paint correction. So that's what I started with.
Okay, and then. You guys, so you lost him and kind of...
Yeah, so he, we built this to a point where we were in an actual shop. It was still Zach's business, and I was a key component there, just helping to get the work done. So, I mean, at that point, it was still just a bunch of guys doing it on the weekends, just as a
day,
passion
day
project.
Job, then coming at nights and weekends.
Yep,
oh, my
yep,
God.
100%.
Yeah, that's... And if there's a physical component there too, which is, you know, not that everybody here is like, you know, super old, but I just want to say that, you know, there's no spring chickens here, and the older you get, you know, arthritis and all that, so you feel this at the end of the day.
I just turned 32 years ago, and it
spring
is, I mean, that, yeah, I always consider myself kind of young and spry, and boy, you spend, well, some people don't know what we do, so we are putting in 20, 30, 40 man hours on these vehicles, so we are all over these things.
Yeah, let's talk about like, all the services you do. I mean, besides paint correction, I mean, that's kind of the big... You know, people notice, you know, a car looks nice, but it's more than that. I mean, you're talking full interior detail, you know, under hood. Mm-hmm. I mean, you name it. So for folks who might not be too familiar, what are services that you offer here?
Yeah, so we, like you said, the core of our business is paint correction. So we want to make the car look as good as it can within budget constraints or whatever the customer's desires are. But our goal is to make the paint look freaking bananas. So that's what we do, and then we have a bunch of services that sort of complement that. So you get it looking right, and then you protect it. So we have ceramic coating. We can put sealants on, but ceramic coatings give you multi-year protection. It makes it a lot easier to maintain that finish once we've kind of achieved those results that we're looking for. We have paint protection film to keep the rock chips at bay. We've just added ceramic window tint as sort of a complimentary service. And then also maintenance services are new this year just to help, you know, if you want to hire out that portion of it to keep that shine looking good, we can make that happen.
Nice. And I'm sure, you know, word of mouth travels fast. So, you know, especially if you're, you know, you got something that's nice, looks sharp, and it's going to attract some attention, people are more than happy to say, you know, oh, man, who did the detail on that? And next thing you know, you got 5 or 10 other appointments, and your calendar gets full.
Yeah, that's what I like to say. We're putting our Detail Peoria shine out there, and it looks different when you see it. So,
and you're talking about software and point-of-sale software, I imagine. mean, I was expecting to see like a big board in here where you got like written down all the schedule of all the cars coming in.
We do. It's in the back.
Do you? Okay.
It's on a thing called a computer.
But no, that's not. I mean,
no, I know what you mean.
But in our detail shop, it's kind of the same thing. You kind of as much as you can put all that on a computer. Sometimes guys are washing clean cars, just looking at what's coming up.
Sure.
Kind of keeps them going all the time. So,
yep.
And kind of puts your mental schedule in order as opposed to running over to the laptop screen and looking on there. So.
Yeah. Right now it's very manuals. But, yeah, we do have that. Having that big board is mm-hmm. nice. We do eventually want to have, like, a screen so that it's all controlled by one spot.
Sure.
And I can, Nick and I are doing this remotely, so be able to see that happening remotely.
So is there somebody here during the day?
Yes. So we are full-time 8 to 5, Monday through Friday shop. So we have our head of vehicle services, Ryan Gleason, is a fantastic detailer. He is a pro's pro. So he runs our day-to-day. And then we've got a second full-time guy and working on our third.
Oh, wow.
That's great.
To get going in here.
You're getting serious. You are serious. We've been serious.
This year, it's a serious year right now. This is a make-or-break year, so it's going well.
401k?
Honestly, yeah.
What are your stock options, Matt? Let's talk about that. Well, I mean, besides the nuts and bolts of kind of getting a business to that next level and kind of above and beyond, what are kind of the day-to-day things that you enjoy about running Detail Peoria?
So these days it's a lot about growing the business. So kind of Nick and I are removing ourselves from the actual physical work so that we can actually build the business. So the things that I'm getting excited about is automating a lot of these things. So getting our scheduling workflow smoothed out so that as we grow and grow, it doesn't become as manual and painful a task. Getting our policies and procedures in place and trying to automate some of the shop management that we need to do. So, but detailing in general, I mean, I always love testing new products. So Nick and I both write blogs for a supply company, Detailed Image.
Oh, cool.
So we get lots of new stuff from them. When things are announced at SEMA, we always get giddy and excited to try new things.
Isn't that great? Not the best feeling in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Blogging's cool, kids. So there.
It is. It's still cool. And we'll throw a link, if you're cool with that, we'll throw a link to your blog and let folks get turned on to that, because we always like passing on some good material. Because one thing Eric and I do is we consume a lot of the stuff that's out there, and then we'll come back like, hey, did you hear like Rogan's guest or Matt Farah? And like, yeah, it was okay. Or this guy's awesome. We need to do stuff more like this person. So there's a lot of good content out there. So we're happy to.
Well, in SEMA, I mean, have you been to SEMA?
No, we haven't yet.
I mean, just watching those guys apply like wraps and stuff right there live in front of you, and you're like, oh, look at that. You can learn so much from just watching. That's why YouTube is so great for learning things. Because visually, that's how I cook, actually. I look up a recipe on YouTube, watch somebody cook. I'm like, yeah, I can do that. But the same thing with, YouTube and SEMA. Going to watch somebody actually apply something like that onto a car or watching, how they cut things.
It's
and stuff
crazy
like that.
How easy they make it look. Because you look at
it is true,
YouTube
yeah.
and you're like, oh, man. Yeah, we can add paint protection film, no problem. Let's go do that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man. what do we get ourselves into?
Whoops.
Yeah, we got a replacement sheet one time. I remember a car came in with just a wrinkle in it, and we didn't know it corrected itself with the heat gun. So we got a whole new sheet, and we tried to apply it ourselves. First off, the manufacturer's charging $250 for the sheet, custom cut to the hood.
Oh, boy.
And then we jacked it, putting it on. I'm like, we're never doing this ever again.
Well, now you know who to call.
Yeah, exactly.
It is a trick, but, yeah, we've kind of got it figured out now. So.
Yeah, it's crazy. So you got the Ford RS. You got some other cars, right?
Yeah, I actually I was aiming to replace my 2004 Audi S4 with the RS. I still may do that, but I do still have the S4.
Is it the V8 one or is it?
It is a V8.
Yeah, okay.
So I am having trouble getting rid of it because one, it's not really worth anything, and two, I still really love it, but it does leak oil and it needs lots of work all the time. That's one of the reasons I got the RS. So
sure.
What's a Danger Ranger?
It's just what I call my 2005 Ranger.
like a shop truck or.
No, I'm go-karting. I needed a truck, and then I just always like having a truck around. But yeah, again, that's also it's my winter vehicle, so that's something I don't care about beating on a little bit.
Sure, and I will say Rangers take a lot of abuse. I know that they didn't change. I don't think they've changed that body style.
Well, now they have.
Years.
It's got it's got a brand new one.
Yeah,
now
it's all nice.
Okay,
but I was watching Top Gear the other day, and it's like made in Turkey with an engine from South Africa. I mean, I don't even know that the Ranger is the same. I don't know. It's a world. It's a world truck or something. So
I just remember a friend of mine from high school had a 94 Ranger, which is the 2.3 standard four-cylinder stick shift. And, I mean, we did all sorts of dumb high school stuff with that thing, and it still ran. It yeah. still ran great, looked great. I mean, I don't know, whatever they made those out of, I think they should continue to make cars out of, because it couldn't blow it up. Your partner, Nick, is also kind of a gearhead, so it's, if you wouldn't mind sharing kind of yeah. what he's been to.
Oh, man, that guy has been through so many cars. I think
one of those guys.
Yeah, oh, yeah. So, I mean, he's been through quite a few, but he's settled on, at least his current ride is a 2002 911 Turbo, and it is sweet. It is nicely spec'd.
It's the one behind you there?
It is the one behind us.
For the folks at home, it is a beautiful, almost like a midnight blue, and I'm going to look up the color because I'm a sucker for blue. And, huh, go figure, it looks absolutely beautiful. So, nice detail job on that.
You know, that's the great thing about the Porsche. You look at the body, and you're like, 16 years old, 17? No, it's not. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Still looks good.
Gorgeous. Yeah.
Nice. Well, cool. So what are some of, I mean, we talked a little bit before we started rolling here, the nice thing about being a gearhead and being into cars and working in the business is that you actually get to kind of see a whole bunch of stuff. And in this business, you're like, they come in looking okay, and they leave looking, you know, good as new. So you almost kind of get to like have little mini restorations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of your favorite customer cars or cars you've worked on over the years?
Oh, man, I mean, I'm going to leave out so many really good ones. We've been really fortunate. That's one of the things that keeps us going in this is just the types of vehicles that we get to work on. But,
it's like a rolling car show, right?
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, two of the major ones from last year, we did a 67 Jaguar E-Type that had been restored.
Nice.
That thing was super nice. It had been repainted in the last decade, but it definitely needed our touch, and we made a major transformation on it. It looked phenomenal. It was one of my favorite details of last year. So that was a cool one. We did a Testarossa from the same collection.
That is the epitome of everybody's, you know, 80s, 90s kids' childhood there.
That's, Miami Vice. It's, And that what's cool is hearing the stories behind each of the cars, too. That gets me going as well. So that one was a very early spec. It's got a floating rear view mirror, single floating rear view mirror, which is only on, like, the first couple. It's got its original tires, special tires that go with it, and the owner knows all this stuff way better than me, obviously. But it's just cool to know
special vehicle
behind it. Yeah,
yeah.
But there's a massive list. I mean, we did a 2018 Ford GT last year. Phenomenal! Oh my gosh, to just be around that, it's like amazing.
I'd be scared to even drive that in Peoria to your location. I'd be, you know.
Yeah, it was trailered over.
that's probably the same.
It had 26 miles on it when we got it. That one, we spent 60 man hours correcting the paint on a 26 mile Ford GT. So that's one of another thing in terms of what we do. I mean, it scales massively. I mean, we can spend 2.5 hours washing your car and putting some wax on it, or we can spend 60 hours with a polisher on a brand new car making it literally perfect.
Wow. I did want to touch on that because, I mean, I remember years and years ago, you know, you'd see a car in a showroom and it was just, you know, wow, that's beautiful. And of course they got, you know, all kinds of, you know, stuff on there to make it look pretty. And then nowadays you walk through a showroom, and even a high-end Corvette, the first thing my dad and I will be like, orange peel everywhere. Or like, we'll start nitpicking the finish or something. And it's not because we're like, want to be super critical or anything, but it's like, at some point, it seems like orange peel has just become, that's just how the cars look today.
Yep.
So a lot of the, like what you're saying with a brand new car, like what are some of the steps that you would take to kind of get it to look from off the truck at the dealership to something you'd see at a show and be like, darn, that's a nice looking car.
Well, what's tough is the orange peel issue. There's not a good solution for it, because these days manufacturers have pared down the amount of paint and clear coat that they put on these vehicles to a bare minimum, to that hopefully it won't chip. Some manufacturers are having trouble with chipping, but there's so little clear coat to work with that you really can't block sand a car unless it's literally going to be a show car. I won't ever block sand and try and take orange peel off of a daily driver, because I just have to take too much clear coat. And all your UV protection is in the clear coat, and a lot of that rises to the top as it's curing. So I'm taking most of the UV protection off if you're going to go and try and block sand and take all that orange peel out. So you're kind of, your hands are kind of tied if you're actually going to drive your car and need it to sit in the sun and live. In terms of orange peel, at least. But a normal brand new car, you're going to have just normal contaminants from transport that you'd take off with a. There's chemical decontamination, then we clay bar everything before we polish it to remove all the contamination, get the bare clear coat, and then we just use, I mean, we have dozens of different types of pads and polishes to try and dial in the minimally invasive process to correct the car to a clear finish.
I guess it'd probably be a good time to kind of shift gears and talk shop a little bit. You know, we were talking about like surface contaminants and things like that. Is that what people call like rail dust? Because you see people talk like, "I got a new car, it's white, I got all these rust pops on it." Like, what the hell happened? And is that true? I mean, that actually happens.
Yeah, rail dust. I mean, you get it from even just driving normal cars, even after transport, and they've been cleaned and properly and everything. As you drive your car, there's industrial fallout and just metal fallout in the environment. Like, I work at Caterpillar at the tech center. We're running diesel engines all day, and all that exhaust smoke is getting laid on everybody's cars. And just driving in the roadway, everybody's exhaust is out in the air. And so you will pick up, and transport rail dust is a major thing. And then in normal use, you'll pick up iron particles, metal particles that we have a chemical that will react with it and break it down so that you don't have to touch it and drag it across the finish. But then what's cool is it turns purple during that chemical reaction. So on white cars, it stands out.
It's there.
Just bleeds.
That's cool.
It's like CSI.
You know how many times over the years I've seen people come in with a car with like a hatchback that the hatch is just rusting from the outside? They never cleaned it at all. You know, some piece of rust or something. It just a speck. We're talking a particle sits on top of the paint and sits there for a year. Next thing you know, it's through the paint. It's actually, you know, into the metal, and you're screwed at that point.
Yeah, as soon as you've broken through that protective layer, that's what the whole paint system is there for.
Yeah.
You're talking about clear coat. I mean, I see a lot of late model cars, too, that after a few years, especially if they're, you know, from Florida or southern or western climate, something like that, where they don't have a whole lot of rust, but the finish is just either baked or the clear coat's starting to flake off.
Yep.
You know, what can somebody do if they get to a point where, you know, a clear coat is kind of starting to degrade? Is everything shot at that point, or can you get a little life back into it?
Well, it depends on the level of defects. If it is a surface level, like swirl mark or scratch that hasn't gone through the clear coat, that's something that can be mechanically abraded away by a competent detailer and you know, restored. But if the clear coat is actually failing, if it's starting to crack or peel or chip, there's not much you can do but to add more clear coat, and so then it needs to be sanded and resprayed.
Gotcha. So there's no magic fix, you know, you can get off the shelf somewhere and
no. Well, I mean, there. So that's what's cool about this industry is that they're constantly innovating. So there are companies that are working on things like that, but they haven't been time tested yet. But
yeah,
there's stuff like that people are trying to make happen.
Let's talk about like a little some of the gadgets that I've seen watching. You were saying YouTube videos. I geek out, you know, all winter long. I watch a lot of detail videos, mechanic videos, stuff like that. And the big rage, it seems like, in the last 2 years has been foam cannons. Mm-hmm. Like, what's up with it? Just throws soap and water on your car.
I never thought about that. Yeah, you see it everywhere now.
Yeah, is that a thing?
It's a thing. We use one here. Whenever I tell anybody, because people ask me that all the time when we've coated their car, like, do I need to get a foam cannon? Like, it's a really nice optional part of your routine. Definitely not necessary, but it can help make the process a little bit safer if you're trying to just really control your wash process. It can be nice to shoot that on there.
Is the goal kind of just to lift a lot of the contaminants off and then rinse them away and then start your clean?
Or? Right. So if I have a really, really dirty car that I'm not about to polish and correct anyway, that the pre-soak and pre-rinse is an awesome option. Anytime you're washing a car, the idea is to try and remove the dirt and debris without dragging it across the surface of the gloss, you know, trying to drag it across that glossy surface and create scratches. So that is an effective tool for that.
The dirty chamois.
or the chamois that's like not really a chamois. It's like some like ShamWow thing or some infomercial. And you're like, where did you get that? Yeah. No, stop.
Or how long you've been using that same chamois, you know. Or my kids like throw it on the pavement to dry it out.
let's talk about some of like the most common things, because we're coming in here. you know, the first thing is like, oh, everything's super clean. That's awesome. That's how I aspire to be, and I will never be this clean. But, like, what are some of the folks at home doing wrong? Everybody's got, like, oh, I've got the bucket with the little screen in it, and I use, like, microfiber towels I bought at Costco, or I've got, you know, my special shampoo that I, you know, use. Like, what are some common things that almost everybody's doing wrong that you're like, I wish I could just tell them this is not it?
I mean, a bunch, like... The list is endless, yeah. But
using old towels from the house,
100% that type of stuff. So I mean, one, using a two bucket method. A lot of people, even if you have like, if you're using microfiber towels, just having a microfiber towel does not make it. Oh, it's not going to scratch anything.
Oh man, that's it.
Okay. No, if you get it,
I thought that's all I needed.
If okay. you get it dirty, and then you don't, it shouldn't touch clean paint. So yeah. Right. So. Not using the two bucket method. So if you're, you know, washing your car and using the same bucket to rinse with, you're eventually going to be washing the last part of your car with mud, yeah. And so you'll be introducing all those that contamination to the surface there. Drying methods. So like you guys have already brought up chamois. That's a big no-no.
Yeah, chamois. What's the fatal flaw of the chamois?
It's just not proper for a glossy surface. It will mar the surface. And so, like, when you're washing your car, the drying portion is the most dangerous part when you're talking about swirls and scratches and inducing any sort of defect to the paint. You're done with your lubricated steps. There's no soap in between anything. It's literally just paint and water. And if you didn't get the car completely clean, then, you know, that's where your big risk is. And then if you're also using something that's not really, really soft, like, like my dad's chamois that he used was like hard.
I'm having visions of the same thing. Yeah. My dad with his 86 Malibu, you know, taking that chamois, just like pressing so hard.
Squeak! You hear it squeaking across the finish.
And all I can think of is, you know, how many micro scratches were being left in there.
Or people use water blades now.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Hard blades to wick water off.
And I will admit, I bought one of those and I used it maybe like a year on like one of our dailies, and I'm like, This is not smart. But of course they get you. It's like, oh, it's like made of the finest surgical silicone.
Yeah, everybody will say it won't scratch. Or
like, yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about other ways that people kind of mess things up. I'm into the really old stuff. I've got 40s, 50s, 60s cars, and my dad always had something cool and old in the garage. And the big thing, you know, when I was 20 years old or so, you start seeing it at car shows, guys coming out with like the feather duster, like the California car duster.
Oh yeah, that was a good one too. Man, and this is all made on TV stuff. I've seen on TV.
It is. Yeah, a lot of it is, you'll see a guy at a show, he's like, oh, you got to get one of these. And it's like, what's that? It's like the waterless car wash. I'm like, where'd you get it? Some guy in a van.
Or the silver towels or whatever. What were those things that were here a couple years ago that had like real metal in the towels or something?
Oh, jeez.
That sounds hideous. But yeah, like, what are some of the gimmicky things that people buy into, like the waterless car wash or something like that?
You nailed it there with the California duster. That's one of our giant no-nos. Anytime we see one in the back of one of our customers' cars, like, you have to throw that away now, or like, I will throw it away for you.
Do you confiscate them here?
We literally, a wall of shame.
Yeah.
As soon as they pick up a car, I was like, I need to throw this away for you and get that. And we do that. But yeah, that California duster, you're just dragging that dust across the paint. And so we're not talking major scratches, right? But they're small scratches that you catch in the sun. You see those holograms and those swirls.
Right.
That's where that type of stuff comes from. So that's what, when you've got a car that you're just taking to a car show now and again, it doesn't see rain or anything. It just gets dust on it. Well, the California duster is not what you want to use to clean that up.
And people think too, oh, it's been in the garage, I don't drive it that much. You know, I don't necessarily want to get out the bucket and all that. It's got a cover on it. Life's good.
Yeah, it seems. But what about the little spray wax thing? You know, you say, oh, I'm just gonna get a little gloss over here, or your body shine, or something like that.
Yeah, there are better products than that. So, like, the Quick Detailer was originally made to do that. It has some lubrication, but what it doesn't do is lift any of the dirt off. You're still kind of spreading this. This smeary mixture of dust and whatever was on your car across it. Mm-hmm. So it's not an effective cleaning agent. It's a good last step product, but they make what is called a rinseless wash that is actually made for that application.
Oh, wow.
So that's the stuff that you should be using.
So there's actually, I hate to say this, but like Yeah, like Meguiar's Quick Detailer or the Mother's one. Right. I mean, there's actually like a professional version of that that does a much better job.
Yeah, it's called Optimum No Rinse, and it was actually made primarily for the guys in California. You can't, or very restricted free-flowing water use for your cars.
In drought conditions.
So this was formulated to actually effectively lift and suspend dirt and contaminants in the solution. And then using microfiber towels that only touch clean paint, that are only there for that specific thing, that don't ever sit on the ground.
In Costco.
if they're cared for properly, I'm okay with Costco towels.
Okay, can you even wash those things and reuse them?
Yeah.
You can? Okay.
You do not want to use anything with a fabric softener in it.
Okay.
So they make special detergent that's just for microfiber towels. And really, as long as it's just a detergent and there's no fabric softener in it, it's just tough to find stuff like that that you can confirm that it, there's
I'm
no
softener.
I'm
making notes for work on that one.
Yeah. Just don't throw it in with, like,
I think we got some Huggy sheets in ours.
Don't throw it in with your Carhartt. Yeah. Bunch of mud caked on there. As long as we're talking about protection and taking steps to protect paint from getting damaged in the first place, because you say a lot of your work is paint correction. Well, the protection aspect of that. What's a ceramic coating versus like a polymer wax or polymer sealant? I think a lot of folks kind of have a misunderstanding as to what those are, because it's not just something you spray on like wax. It's a whole different process, right?
Yeah, exactly. So like for car care, for protection, for many, many years, all you had was wax, and then they had polymer sealants, and those will last for weeks to months. And then you'd have to reapply it.
Sorry.
Are you powerlifting or whatever?
Sorry. I'm trying to act like that kid next door.
That's all good.
So that's what you had for several years. And then, maybe 8-10 years ago, some of these ceramic coatings started coming into the car care market. And what those do is just extend the life of that protection. It's silica-based, and it forms a chemical bond with the top layer of clear coat. And so these things are semi-permanent. They will last. It really depends. People always ask, that's the major thing, is how long do these ceramic coatings last? And it really depends majorly on two things. One is the installation. So you have to properly prep the surface. You have to properly install the product. It has to properly cure. All those things need to happen. And then you also have to properly care for it throughout the rest of the life of the vehicle to get the most out of it. But these things will last several years versus, waxes will actually melt off of your car on a really hot day. It's, it's temporary protection versus, semi-permanent protection.
Yeah. So a ceramic coat, you can actually go back and service and keep cleaning later on and keep lifting,
right,
and cleaning that.
Yeah, and the best thing, I guess the biggest advantage that ceramic coatings have in my mind is just how much easier it makes the car to clean. We actually have a reduced cost maintenance program for any cars that have been ceramic coated, because it literally takes us less time to get it done. It beads water really well, so that's what people want to get out of really any protection, is that really nice water behavior. So the water beads up really nice, it rolls off nice, so the car stays cleaner in between washes, and then when you do wash it, the dirt comes up easier, contaminants don't bond as easily, so you don't really need to clay the car as often as you maybe would without one, those sorts of things. So,
is it to strip a ceramic coated car? Is it true what I've heard that you have to do?
It depends. So, for a properly installed ceramic coating, it can be abraded away. Different ceramic, there are so many on the market. Some are going to react differently, but really just a normal either compounding or even just polishing process will remove the ceramic coating.
Okay, so not just like taking a sander with 1,000 grit.
Yeah, no. So there are products out there that are so hard that if you improperly install and you leave a very large high spot, that you will need to sand that high spot off.
Oh, wow.
But most ceramic coatings can be addressed with a polisher.
And what's, you said 3 or 4 years lifespan? Or?
So we typically, at least the coatings that we use, there are products, we typically quote 3 to 5 years life out of a normally driven, well-cared for vehicle.
And we're in the extremes of Central Illinois, so we've got hot, cold, we got everything. So Southern California might get 10 years out of that, right?
Yeah. And a weekend car, you might get 10 years out of it. It really depends on how you drive it. If it's not seeing any rain at all, it might not might last longer. If you're not really exposing it to the salt that we see here, mm-hmm. that really can degrade at least the water behavior. The coating is still there, but what people see as protection is what is the water behavior doing? And there are ways to, you know, kind of bring that back. And really what you're seeing is just the bonded contaminants are reducing the surface tension, and so it's not beating water anymore. Coating's still there, but if you can remove those contaminants, that coating will perform again. We've been testing coatings for a long time. So there was a coating that we really, really love. It just does not deal with that salt buildup nearly as well as our other products. So we've kind of removed it or kept it solely for, you know, weekend summer cars.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because it seems like that's been, I mean, even, you know, my dad and my grandpa, like, you know, you see a rain on a car and it beads up. Ah, it's good coat of wax on that.
And that's the dream, isn't it? When you walk up to a car and there's like all these little speckles of water standing on it, you know, right. You've done something right.
Yeah.
Whereas my trucks, the water just like looks like a big film over the whole thing.
Well, it's funny. I didn't know there was actually like a term though, the water behavior. That's it just means it's beating up, right?
Industry
right.
lingo, Daryl.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to add that to my repertoire. Well, and why is it important for folks? I mean, we were talking earlier in the show in the news segment about people keeping their cars longer and things like that. Why is it important for people to invest in something like a ceramic coating or just in maintaining the finish and the, you know, the protection of the car?
Yeah, so I mean, we talked about that early on. With cars costing as much as they do, it makes sense. People are taking out longer loans. People may need to keep them for longer.
Yeah, 84, 96
months. I just saw that. Yeah, yeah. So I didn't know there was such a thing.
It's nice to be able to put protection on that's going to keep it looking new and keep you enjoying that vehicle for a longer period of time. From our paint protection film side, that's one of the major things is keeping those rock chips at bay. I mean, we're in the thick of it right now with all the potholes being ripped up.
Oh, yeah. It's bad.
Oh, my gosh.
It's as bad as it's ever been in my
memory.
That's
what I think, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's.
I don't think I'm crazy saying that. Yeah.
I just thought the other day, everybody complains every year, but I was driving to work the other day. I'm like, no, this is bad. This has got to be. I'd never seen them on my street. They're craters in my street. The city was out actually filling it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't think I've seen that in however many years of driving here in Illinois. So.
Right.
I don't know, but as long as potholes are here, rock chips are going to happen, and especially the winter. Winters are hard here in Central Illinois. So.
Yeah,
and we're not done yet. There could still be salt trucks here in the next month on the roads. So you had a question about salt. I mean, what is the best way to deal with salt on your car? Do you neutralize it or just get it off as fast as possible?
I mean, we don't use anything special. It's typically just our normal wash process.
If we were the Danger Ranger or whatever, would you just like rush home and like get a fresh water on to get that off there? Or?
I mean, it can normally what we recommend is just weekly washes, and especially when it's getting really nasty out, it's kind of a crapshoot, right? It's cold outside. A lot of people don't have ways to do it. The sooner you can get it off, the better. But your normal wash process, especially if you have some nice protection on there, it doesn't have to be a ceramic coating. It should come off without too much effort.
I guess that leads us into the question of the very tempting, ever so popular $3 automatic car wash. Mm-hmm.
Because brand new and up the street from us.
We see them. Yeah, I mean, Peoria's put two or three of them in here in the last couple years.
Three vacuums.
I got a neighbor. He's retired. He's got a nice Dodge truck. And he's like, first thing he did is I bought one of those passes.
$16 a month or whatever.
Yeah. And he's like, I get unlimited washes. And after like probably 2 years, the whole bed size rusted out of his truck or whatever. But is there anything wrong with A, an automatic car wash, and B, like the $3 ones with the brushes and stuff?
Yeah, so I'm going to tread lightly here.
Being very diplomatic.
So anything with brushes, I really have a hard time seeing how that's not going to add swirls and scratches to your paint.
It's impossible.
Those brushes are touching every car that goes through there. It's doing what it says. It's removing the dirt, but, I mean, I don't see guys out there blasting the brushes clean after every car goes through. I mean, it's just not something that is... From my perspective, something that's going to be a proper way to wash your car. I don't have any issue with spray jets. You know, touchless automatic washes. They typically it depends on how often you're going through, what type of protection you have in your car, how well that is going to clean your vehicle. Most of the time, even I do touchless washes. That's one of my processes in the winter. I'll go spray the car off. And then at home, I'll do a rinseless wash. But there still needs to be kind of a mechanical component, a controlled mechanical component to removing that last bit of road film.
Not just some big plastic bristle spinning, 10,000 RPM, or not even that fast. But
no. But all I can think of is, I can go out wheeling tomorrow and then come back and use a $3 wash. And the guy behind me is going to suffer for that because everything was on my truck is going to be on that next guy's car behind me.
Well, there's one in my hometown. Still got a big sign because they're close enough to Wisconsin where they get a lot of 4x4s and guys run up for on the weekends up to Wisconsin and just tear it up. And there's big signs everywhere like, no mudders, no mudders.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that's rude. And then I'm like, nah, I've seen some pretty nasty wash bays afterwards. So.
I mean, it's extremely convenient because, I mean, how long does it take to run through one of those things? Like a couple minutes, but... to do it properly, at least me, to do a two-bucket method, it's an hour and a half, 2 hours. I mean, that's a big, expensive time, but that's the proper way to
Well, do you have a heated garage at home?
I don't, no, but I do have a heated shop.
I was going to say, we're sitting in one.
Well, yeah, I was wondering, when he goes home, he says, I got to wash the car, and is there a place to go out to at home where you can actually, get away? Or is this the getaway now?
This is the getaway, sure. But, I mean, I do have a garage that I can go out to. I mean, it's much easier for me to maintain our vehicles at home versus having to run out to the shop and not be at least, right there if something happens. But
it does beg the question looking around here. I see, this booth area, but where do you guys actually wash a car here? I don't see drains on the floor or anything like that.
Yeah, it's right in front of the door there. So there's a drain there, and that's where we do all our washing. Try and keep it at the front of the shop and then do any of our correction from there. And then kind of towards the back of the shop is where we put all the protection on.
Okay.
And not to be too much of a nerd, but, I mean, what do you do with hard water? Because around this area, the minerals, I mean, I know people that do, all kinds of special filters. The RO systems.
Yeah, so we will be adding that. That's something that we definitely want. But as long as you're drying your car right away and you don't give that water any time to evaporate and leave those deposits on your vehicle, then you're fine.
Sure.
The trick is most people need to wash their car outside in their driveway and you have to be on top of it because it does not take very long for that water to evaporate.
Well, and I didn't realize how bad the water was here until I got a terrible. Dark blue car and then a black car. And in the summer, I mean, you're constantly out there trying to dry the side.
We do have a small RO system. And when we were researching that, there's a total dissolved solid count. And how many gallons that will treat is dependent upon the total dissolved solids in the water. And we are... At least at our old shop, I haven't measured here, it was right at the EPA limit for water, 500 parts per million. So we don't get very many gallons of treated water out of that system.
Makes sense. How can folks kind of learn a little bit more about Detail Peoria, some of the services you offer, and what you're up to? Because I'm sure there's a lot of folks that want to learn a whole lot more.
Yeah, we are very active on Facebook and Instagram, so you can find us there at Detail Peoria for both. We have a website, detailpeoria.com. We are blogging some things like ceramic coatings. We have a ceramic coating 101 blog post and paint protection film 101, paint correction 101 to kind of tell you about the ins and outs of what we do. And then we also write up a lot of the cool jobs that we get to work on there. And then we have launched a YouTube channel, and that's one of our major goals for this year is to start producing more content there, so I think video is kind of the next step for us.
Yeah, I know on that YouTube channel you got a nice little video that's very, very nice photography, and I know that's another kind of a side business that I want to say hobby/business/passion you're into, right? It's photography.
Yeah, Nick and I are both majorly into photography, and if we weren't building this business, we would be much further along our path there. But it also lends itself really well to documenting and displaying the type of work that we do because we can show exactly, okay, we're taking this finish from, worn and tired to, literally better than showroom. So, and you can see it in, clear photography.
I can totally get with that because nothing is more fun to me than at the dealership when a car comes in that's unique or super cool. I'll take 100 pictures of that thing, just post them up, and just everybody, do you enjoy this car as much as I do? I don't care if you do or not, because you're going to look at it.
Check this out. I've got more on my phone.
Yeah.
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, photography and cars just seem like it's like peanut butter and chocolate, right?
Yep, 100%.
Yeah, I can't get enough of it.
I just wish I was so much better, because I'll take 100 pictures, and 3 are usable.
You're using your phone, Daryl.
I need to invest in
which is getting better. Honestly, you can do a lot with your phone that you couldn't do even 3 years ago.
Right.
So I won't even fault you for that.
And, I mean, high-end cameras are coming down, too. What you can do with the equipment that's out there these days is pretty incredible.
And just because you have a decent camera doesn't mean you take a decent picture.
That's true.
So,
good point. Good point.
As I know.
I'll buy one of your old ones when you get a new one. How's that?
There you go.
Deal.
Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to speak to?
No, I mean, I think we touched on quite a bit. You guys know where to find us. You know, we're out here. One of our mottos is just we want to perfect and protect the local cars. We're excited about bringing this level of service to the area. And, yeah, check us out.
If somebody called you up today and said they wanted to get something done, how long would they have to wait?
Right now we're booked about 2 weeks out. It kind of depends.
That's not bad. For this time of year?
Yeah, no. I mean, we're staffing up to try and handle the demand. And some things are we can get in quicker than others. But, yeah, about 2 weeks.
Nice. Yeah, car season, cars and coffee season, show season, all that's going to start ramping up. And plus, a lot of folks have had stuff tucked away in the garage all winter.
Yep.
And like that first nice weekend when you want to get something out, and then you realize you have to move all this other stuff that's piled on the car, and you're like, oh, this looks filthy. Now's the time for everybody to kind of plant the Detail Peoria seed in your mind and at least pick up the phone or check them out on their website, detailpeoria.com. Or on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. See what they're all about.
Yeah, I follow the Instagram. It's pretty cool. You guys got some neat stuff on there.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right, Matt. Well, are you cool to stick around? We've got a couple other segments on the show. So I want to bring you into the fold, but we do appreciate you letting us get to know you a little bit better and letting the folks at home know as well.
Plus, Daryl's got to do his old man segment where he bitches about things. So.
This is true.
Yeah, so you'll definitely want to pile on.
This is true. All right. Well, now it's Eric's turn to light a fire under Elon Musk this week.
Yeah, it's my favorite part of the show. But this is your moment of Musk. So this week was Why Ask Why with Elon. He rolled out the crossover model called the Y. It's their newest style EV. And according to NBC News, the decision to name the new battery electric vehicle the Y completes an inside joke at Tesla. It's a four-part of line spelling S3XY, which the 3 would be a backward Z. The company wanted to name its compact sedan the E when the 3 came out, but it was discovered that that was owned by some of its Detroit rivals. So Elon screamed out at the last launch of the Y that Ford killed the sex, and the crowd cheered. The 47-year-old executive spent a half hour long presentation going over Tesla's history about rolling over the new Model Y. He offered a number of details about the vehicle, but left out other questions that were unanswered. And this question was probably unanswered. Why is a teenager trapped in a billionaire's body? And that is your moment of Musk.
It's quite appropriate. Quite appropriate.
This guy, I tell you what, man.
We have material every week, and Eric will actually like text me like, oh, I got a great segment for this week. He just did this or had this to say at a conference, or he said this on Twitter.
He's so amazing, really. I mean, the guy is genius in one hand, and then he's 14-year-old boy on the other hand. He's living the dream.
I mean,
really.
I'm not going to say I wouldn't do the exact same thing.
I would make a flamethrower for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it goes.
Would you dig holes under Los Angeles?
Why not?
Make a Hyperloop bank teller thing to transport you. All right. So speaking of folks who like juvenile things, I just want to take a little segment here.
Yeah, this is great.
This is our weekly Riff Zone segment where we basically just complain about things that irritate us, which I do on a normal basis.
I thought you'd run out of things, but this was a fresh take.
Ask my wife; she will be like, "Yeah, you're complaining about this week." Okay, so the other day I'm sitting at the light right up, just up the road here on my lunch break, and on the way back I see this guy take this corner, and he's driving an older Jeep YJ Wrangler, probably from the late 80s, so square headlight ones, and he's like bumping some music, and like, you know, tires are making big noise because it's those big knobby, you know, like 35s or whatever.
Yeah.
And the top, he's got one of those banners across the windshield that says, "Let's get topless. Let's go topless and get dirty." And he's got like, he's like mean mugging me. He's got like the Oakleys, and I don't know what year it was, but
was
apparently,
he really mean mugging you?
Yeah, he looked, because I was staring at him. He probably
I'm sure
was
you were
wondering what the heck I was looking at. But I'm like, dude, you're a grown man. You got that on your truck? I don't know. It just, to me, he was at least my age, 40, 45, something like that. And I just kind of thought, at what age do you stop putting like the goofy stickers on your car?
I think they have a term for that. It's called arrested development.
Fair. That's fair. But, I mean, as Eric pointed out, there's other stickers that are equally as offensive and or juvenile, right?
Yeah, I mean, I look back at the old Farfignugan ripoff, you know, the fucking Groovin'.
Right.
With the guy, and that was actually kind of funny. But then I literally see this one where the stick figure is humping the IT.
Yeah.
I see that one all the time, and I can't believe... I'll be sitting at my kid's school waiting to pick him up, and somebody will have it on the back of their car. I'm like, really? Hey, whatever. The Shocker. Now, this one kills me because...
That's a bit much.
We traded for a Dodge Avenger like 10 years ago. It was blacked out, and the guy had changed the Dodge logo to a Shocker logo, a hard plastic Shocker.
On the car?
Yeah. Well, we didn't want to recon the car and pay for a new Dodge logo, so they left the Shocker logo on the car.
And you sold it?
Yeah, and the 70-year-old guy bought it. And he came in for services all the time.
That's terrible.
It's still there.
I feel bad for the guy.
And he doesn't know. He didn't know any difference. He just thought it was like a cool little, like, you know, hey, party, you know. I guess it is kind of a party, so I don't know.
It's like the fish. No, it's not like the fish.
No, it was unbelievable. But yeah, that's on people's cars. And then, of course, every trucker who has any respect has a naked lady on the back, right?
The old 70s trucker mud flaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see that as often anymore. I remember that was a thing when we were kids, like on a vacation, family vacation, going to Florida. My mom would be like, hey, kids. So we wouldn't be staring at it. She'd be like, hey, hey, let's play a new game. And like, I'm going to stare at that mud flap, Mom. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What about the stick figure family stickers? I think you had a little moment where you were ranting on that, right? Like the 12 families.
I sent you a picture, yeah. It's a guy with a truck had like 12 kids on there.
And the dog and the cat.
And a dog. And one of them was an angel. And I'm like, oh my God. This is like this whole life story right here on the back of his truck. To each their own, you know.
I guess,
you know, and if you want to put the names of all the family members on there so that when a stranger walks up, go, hey, April, you know. I know your mom, Sarah, you know.
That did happen to a friend of mine.
Did it?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
And she worked part-time at a mall and... She had like the family's names or something on there, and is like, "Hey, Courtney," and she's like, "How did you know my name?"
I bet
and
you
like,
peeled that crap off.
Yeah, they got all scraped off of the razor blade like a day later. So same with personalized plates. I don't know. It's a little.
Yeah, I got personalized plates online. I don't care.
All right. So as long as we're ranting, this is actually kind of a happy rant. One of the things I noticed this weekend on social media, a lot of folks had shared this with me. Lady Gaga, apparently, I don't know if she either got pulled over or if it was like part of a video shoot or something. She was spotted driving around Southern California in a bright red 93 F-150 Lightning pickup.
That is so cool.
Which, it's first of all, the supercharged ones people still have and they're cool. You see those at shows and stuff. But the old ones, the old square body style.
I was
going to
say
trucks.
The square body. It's just a cool truck.
And yeah.
At the time, it didn't seem that spectacular. And even 10 years down the road, it didn't seem that spectacular. But now, looking back, and the colors are just popping. I imagine if you guys were your hands on one of those,
yeah.
You would kill it.
It's funny what cars kind of back themselves into those kind of, you know, coveted spots. And this is definitely one of them.
Yeah, I remember you could pick those up when the supercharged ones came out. I think those had just a regular 351, I mean, kind of a, you know, fuel-injected, boring, whatever. But they were fun, nice-looking trucks.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you could have picked those up for a song. So the fact that Lady Gaga's got one and it's legitimately hers, that's awesome. I also want to highlight just how cool it is that there's a lot of female celebrities out there that have some really awesome rides. Everybody's like, you know, oh, you're a car guy. People forget, especially, you know, when you have money to play with. There's a lot of females, a lot of women out there who have some nice stuff in their
stable. Women have money too, Daryl?
They do in 2019.
How progressive.
I still, you know, my wife's a big gearhead, and we'll go to a show or something, and she'll drive one of the cars, like, oh, which one's your husband? She's like, this is mine. You know, so you still kind of have to, like, tamp down the stereotype. But Beyonce apparently has a 59 Rolls-Royce Silver Cloud II convertible, which is pretty slick. It's a silver one. I think she paid, like, $1 million for it. Kendall Jenner, which I don't follow any of the Jenners or Kardashians, but...
Your wife probably does.
Maybe. I don't know. Sorry, Sarah. she has a 69 Camaro SS convertible, which is it's all kind of blacked out. It's a really nice built ride.
I can respect that.
Yeah, for sure. Nicki Minaj, if that's your thing, she's got a pink Lamborghini Aventador with some custom touches.
I mean, dude, you couldn't sit in a Focus with sports seats. Imagine Nicki Minaj's butt in a Lambo. Come on, really?
Yeah, there might be some custom mods
yeah,
there.
Yeah, have to be.
I don't know. Sheryl Crow, big fan of her.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you are.
She's got... No, I am. Was it sarcastic? I like her. Anyways, the Globe Sessions is a great record, Eric. Yeah. Anyways, she's got a bunch of Mercedes. She's got some newer AMGs, like the SUV with some stuff in it. And then she's also got a really nice white 59 190 SL Roadster.
That Gullwing?
It's the tinier version of that, but okay. Same kind of lines.
Okay.
And then Daryl Hannah, I don't think she has anymore because I think
she's still a thing.
Well,
okay.
That's a whole other show.
Okay.
A whole other podcast called Has-Beens, starring Eric. But Daryl Hannah used to have an 83 El Camino that she had converted to run on biodiesel. I think she had like a Duramax or some other like a late model diesel motor put into it.
For an Ed Begley Jr. come up with this thing?
I think so. Okay, right. I think so. But it was pretty cool. If that's your jam, I mean, you got to respect it other than somebody who's like, oh, I Uber everywhere or I have a driver.
That's true.
You know?
All right, I'll give you that.
Hollywood's a weird place, Eric. Well, but
yeah, I mean, 83 El Camino sounds cool. When you put the biodiesel part in there, you kind of tore it back down for me. But
she had, Jalopnik, I think, had it on a couple years ago. Probably like 10 years ago now. I'm forgetting time and space. But they had on the back window, you know, some people have like, you know, like their car club name or something, you know, like Viejitos or whatever. She added like that kind of like gangster script and it said like biodiesel or something. Like it was goofy.
You smell French fries?
Yeah. She was one of those made them run on French fry oil or something. I don't know. So that's really all I'm going to rant about this week. Speaking of people who like to talk, Eric, what are we going to talk about? Cars of the week.
Oh, cars of the week. So, Matt, did you chime in on this one? Did you get anything?
I will.
All right, cool. All right, so if you've been following me at Facebook at all, outside of the Throwing Wrenches podcast, I got a group on this week. We're going to go out to Seattle in June, and I got a group on for a van with a camper top and all that stuff. It's like a big Ford Econoline.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like $350 for a week.
Nice.
That's pretty cool. Sleeps four, has a stove, has all that stuff in it. I'm like, man, that's sweet. But my dream was always to do the Westfala in Northern California and just like spend a week just cruising around. I don't think a family of four can really do a Westfala. But it had me reminding myself of days yonder when Midtown Imports was still in Pekin and they had a Eurovan down there with a Westfala top and it was brand new. And this was in the mid-2000s.
It's like the newer version of the VW bus, yeah, the camper bus.
Of the Vanagon. So it was after the Vanagon, there was a Eurovan. And the Eurovan wasn't that popular. I think, was it front-wheel drive?
Yeah, it was different. It was not like anything else.
It was front-engine for sure. I'm pretty sure it was front-engine, front-wheel drive.
I think it was based on like the Golf or Jetta or whatever. Yeah.
But that van at that time was like $35,000. And I remember that was like astronomical numbers. Of course, back then, you could buy a Mark IV Supra for $39,000, you know, that seemed expensive. So spend $5,000 less to get a Eurovan seemed outrageous. Well, right now, on I think it's on Facebook, there's a 2002 Eurovan that's going for $14,500, and it's 215,000 miles. And I'm looking at this thing. It looks super clean, super nice, got the pop-up top.
Even with the mileage?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's been up here at Detail Pure. I don't know.
Yeah, might have cleaned it.
Yeah, but this 2.8-liter, 200 horsepower V6. It's all been overhauled. There's the virtual checkbook comes out. This is a car that is probably in my virtual garage.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
But plus, you'd use it. You go camping.
I think I would.
Do all kinds of fun stuff with the family. So, yeah, I could see you. I could see you rolling in something like that. What about you, Matt? I mean, hypothetically, if you had, you know, just a blank check.
Fantasy money.
If I had fantasy money, it is the easiest decision ever, and it is a 991.2 GT3 RS, and that is it. That is end game.
Period. End of the story.
That's what's happening.
But what if you had to do a show every week?
You'll have to have me on again, and then I'll add to my virtual garage. But okay, the first car, unlimited funds, 991.2 GT3 RS.
Yeah.
Awesome. So that's when Detail Peoria gets franchised nationwide, and everything takes off the way it's supposed to.
100%.
Detail Pekin, Detail Dunlop.
Detail Dunfermline. I don't know. Let me ask this. What kind of specifically about Porsches has always kind of been your passion?
Man, that is a tough question. I don't know why I keep getting drawn back to them, but
or German stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I do like German stuff. Like I love my Audi. It's just something about them. Motorsport heritage. Flat. I don't. There's something about a flat six.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's the sound. It's all that. All the way they're built.
What you can't see through audio is he's getting all giddy looking. As he's even describing it. He's just like, yeah.
I know. They are sharp. And we're surrounded by some really nice, really nice German and American stuff here, too.
Yeah, it was Mopar week here. There's a Charger in the back. We've got an extremely custom Challenger right next to us.
I had to do a double take when I came in. This is a newer Challenger convertible.
A custom convertible. This guy's got all kinds of crazy bells and whistles in it.
Nice. Because the back deck is almost like it's got the like the old Plymouth Barracuda from the 70s look to it. And they pulled it off really, really well.
Yeah, it looks nice.
Those
wheels are beautiful too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I would not want to keep those clean. No, I'm just kidding. No, they actually turn out really nice. Okay,
Darren, what is your dream vehicle of the week?
Speaking of German stuff, I occasionally like the German stuff. I never owned a German vehicle, but I
got a Swedish one. I mean, it's close.
It's close, but it ain't German. I will say I got obsessed with watching a Petrolicious video a week or two ago, and it was a gentleman in the UK who bought an early 70s. Mercedes-Benz 280 SE Coupe, and because he grew up and his dad had one, he wanted one just like his dad's. And I watched this thing, and I'm like, I never really was a big fan of those, and now I must have one. So if I had $129,000, I'd go into Hemmings Motor News, and I would buy this one that is...
Holy smokes, that's expensive.
Yeah, this is a 70 Mercedes-Benz 280 SE Coupe. So it looks like those classic kind of mini-finned Mercedes from that era, late 60s, early 70s, but it has the 3.5 V8 in it, so it's almost like a Lincoln or Cadillac, but this thing is it's built so well. And the neat thing about this one is the ones that came stateside at this make and model didn't have a manual transmission, but over in Europe you could get one. So this is actually a UK spec coupe with a 4-speed manual and the optional V8. Beautiful color. It's a light blue kind of a color, and it actually has that rich tan German leather seats, you know, so it looks like a like an office. You
That's
know?
A cool car.
Beautiful car.
My question, though, is why do all the Europeans get all the cool stuff, man?
I don't know. Well, like your Focus.
Yeah,
like,
that was the first time that it's ever been in the U.S.
Yeah, I remember reading about that in like the international press, like, oh, it's too bad. This car is amazing. Too bad the U.S. won't get it. I'm like, what? So, yeah, I mean, at least Ford sometimes will bring, like, for 1 or 2 years,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
we'll get something cool, and then they'll take it off
we
the market.
We don't get that at Toyota. Like, you know, I think Top Gear was, or not Top Gear, but the new Grand Tour.
Oh, yeah.
They were unboxing a Yaris all-wheel drive and all this stuff. It's a rally car. I'm like, Yaris in America sucks. Yeah.
I think I rented one. What's going on?
Yeah. Can't get those cars over here. I don't know what it is. If it's safety standards, if it's emissions, or what. And I would think the emissions would be even stricter in Europe.
You would think. I always love that, too, when people are like, oh, it wouldn't meet U.S. emissions. I'm like, overseas, they're super strict about it. Well, mostly Japan, right?
Yeah.
Japan's kind of tighter.
Yeah, I would say Japan and Europe in general, but all those... those Pacific Rim countries, they probably could give a care less about cat converters and all that stuff. And South America and Africa and all that. But that's why the cool trucks we never get, you know, when you see those old Land Cruisers and stuff like that, you know, that the UN's driving around for peacekeeping missions. Oh, you won't get those over here, you know, the 70 series. But, man, those little turbos, we should be able to get our hands on those, right?
Mm-hmm. Someday.
Someday.
Someday. When they're 25 years or older and we get, like, some exemption, we can import them in. So we'll do that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think is that going to do it for this week?
We have one more segment. Okay. We'll see how this works.
Oh, yes.
We got the video pick of the week. Do you know anything about John DeLorean?
I don't.
No. You don't? Okay. Well, you know all about John DeLorean because
I have his autograph.
Do you really?
I do.
I know your parents met him in an airport. I think we talked about it on an earlier episode.
Detroit airport while he was trying to recover from his failings in the late 80s.
Yeah.
But yeah, I honestly don't know what happened to him after that, and there's been a lot of talk about some movie. That's
yeah, so
out,
there, right? There was a movie that came out in 2018. It was called Driven, and I think it had Jason Sudeikis and some other guys, and it was just kind of a biopic. But the family was kind of mad because they never had any input in this thing at all. So coming out this year, and I don't know if it's going straight to video. I think maybe it's in theaters right now in New York and Los Angeles. It's called Framing John DeLorean. Does that sound right?
Okay, yeah. It's like Framing Roger Rabbit or
yeah, something like
Who
that.
Framed John DeLorean?
But Alec Baldwin now is playing John DeLorean, and which kind of bothers me because I always thought of John DeLorean as like this tall, skinny guy. You remember him. I mean,
yeah, he was kind of tall, salt and pepper hair.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin is not tall and skinny, I don't think.
I mean, he likes to think he might be. Yeah. I don't know.
And I saw a little picture of makeup on him, and it reminded me of that picture of John Travolta in the Gotti costume. Have you seen that?
Where no.
He's got, like, this rubber face on. I think that's kind of what they've done with Baldwin. So anyway, so using the throwing wrenches ropes that we can pull, you know, get things done in the industry,
yeah.
I got a little sneak preview of a clip from this movie, so I'm going to play a little bit of it for you here. But this, I think this is John DeLorean talking to his kid or something like that. Oh, wait a second.
Well, no, wait, is that John DeLorean?
It's supposed to be John DeLorean.
Now, when the time comes.
Oh, it's getting louder. I think now DeLorean did have a daughter with his fourth marriage. Maybe he's talking to his fourth marriage daughter.
He was married to a model, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Hmm. I don't know. This doesn't sound like it's going to be. This might be straight to Netflix.
It's probably straight to DVD. We'll see what happens. I don't think it's going to win an Academy Award.
No.
That's
no.
kind of weird.
Actually, I'm not a fan of Alec Baldwin. I'm sure Alec Baldwin probably falls in your list of people you hate.
I like a lot of his work, but personally, and you know.
Is he up there with Steve Martin?
Yeah. Well, he keeps getting on like TMZ for punching paparazzi. And yeah. But he punched some like female reporter for parking too close to him or standing too close or something. You know, I'm sure you're funny. I like Beetlejuice. I like a lot of the stuff he was in back in the day. But it's like, dude,
I think he sums it up in the end of this.
There you go. Nice.
Yeah, good job. I think that's going to be a great movie.
Yeah.
So that's our video pick of the week.
Yeah, see it or don't. I don't know. We'll see. It might display at a Netflix near you.
Yeah, it might be in a Redbox kiosk before you know it.
Yeah.
All right, so to wrap up this, this little bit of a train wreck at the end.
No, it's fine.
No, this was excellent. Thank you again for having us up.
Hey, thanks for having me on. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, appreciate it. Matt Carter, Detail Peoria. We will definitely stay in touch, and we'll put some links on our site.
Sorry your partner couldn't be here.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again, have him on. You guys would like talking to Nick.
Definitely, definitely. And I'm sure we'll see some of your handiwork and maybe see on.
I'm looking forward to the YouTube stuff. I think, you know, when we see some YouTube stuff, we'll share it on our channel just to let people see it. And that's great.
I'm getting excited about it. It's finding the time, right? So only right. so many hours in a day and video production is.
I will tell you this, because I do this at my job. You know, when I'm doing a video or something like that, and I go back to my desk, I try and upload on there. Everybody just assumes I'm having fun at my desk. I'm like, this is work.
Yeah.
You may think I'm just, ooh, look at this, you're having a great time. But it's actually more stressful doing this stuff because once it's out there, it's out there.
Yeah.
And if I rush it, it's going to look like crap.
You know? I've got to learn it now, too. So there's that learning curve. And then it's just, a lot of hours. Even just editing photos, I know how long that takes. So video, I can only imagine.
Yeah, no, but once you do it and you do it right, the other day I watched a channel and a guy just debadging a truck. I'm like, this guy's a pro, and his video was great, and I learned a lot from it. And so once you get to that level where people use you as a resource, you'll be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be great.
Yeah, well, I wish you much continued success here, and we'll definitely keep in touch and see how things progress. Can't wait to see how things work here in 2019 for you. So best
sky's
of luck.
The limit, right?
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks again.
All right, so for Throwing Wrenches, this is Eric Stahl.
I'm Daryl Scott.
Matt Carter.